Alrighty then, we're on time. I got drafted.
Yeah, see?
Chair and vice chair were absent today, so the chair emeritus got selected.
All right. All you can do is change the name tag.
I could be a Bobby. I always wanted to be a Mike. I got stuck with Glenn. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the AMAS Policy Committee meeting, Thursday, March 8th, 2018. And we did get called to order promptly at 13:30. Do we have a quorum?
We do.
We have a quorum. Is there any audience participation?
There is none.
Moving forward, item number two, minutes of January 25th, 2018. Questions, comments, concerns? Item 2A in your packet, by the way. I will entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion approved.
Second, Blaine
Pearson. I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Hearing none, motion carries. Item number three, staff report, financial progress report. Mr. Curtis Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. that's attachment 3A is the funding budget. What you'll see is we're about halfway through the year, a little bit more. We've expended about 38% of the budget. And we are in good financial position. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Seeing none, I need a motion to accept.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Hearing none, motion carries. Item 3B, technical progress report, Mr. Curtis Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So again, interesting things while we were away was we did finally see a Trump infrastructure proposal that was released, I would say, about a month ago, which is very timely with our discussion for later on the agenda. I would say from our staff's perspective, we were pretty disappointed with the proposal. It flipped the 80-20 federal cost sharing to a 20-80 federal cost sharing, focusing on transformational projects and only providing about $100 billion over 10 years of federal investment to push this forward. We typically spend about $55 billion a year. So, you know, we were a little disappointed, and quite frankly, it's hard to see a lot of communities when they have to go through the federal process seeing a benefit to paying to do that federal process when you're only getting 20% federal share. It almost makes no sense at all. I was with a group of my counterparts throughout the state, and some of them were in Washington when it was announced, and they all were just, you know, kind of, it was brought out like this big dog and pony show, and everybody was like, what is this? You know, there was a lot of surprise. However, post that announcement, then we did hear that Trump still personally seems to be open to an idea of a 25-cent gas tax increase, which would, you know, be phenomenal for the federal system. So I just think it makes our discussion today timely, makes it important. I think there's still a lot of room, obviously, with other things, everything from the tariffs to shootings. Transportation, again, has kind of fallen away, you know, low tide again. But I think it will come back this year, and I think it's you know, it's something that we want to be prepared for and to advocate for. So with that, I'd be happy to answer the questions.
Seeing none, moving forward. Item 3C, AMAC Federal Fund Report. The world famous Mr. Dayer Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to report that we're through another round of funding, CMAC, STBG, and TASA. And the next step now is to get your, if you received a funding for a program, to get that program, to get it programmed through Chris Surma at ODOT District 4. I would like to say that I accidentally sent letters out to the transit agency requesting that they do that, and that caused a little bit of confusion. Transit agencies need to program their new projects through Juana Holston in the Office of Transit in the central office of ODOT. Other than that, you still need to Everyone else still needs to get their projects programmed through Chris Surma. We're getting through 2018. We're in the last quarter, getting close to the last quarter of fiscal year 2018. And we still have a number of projects that need to sell. So it's very important that you you try to get those sold this fiscal year yet, so we don't end up with a large balance. Other than that, there's not much new to report. There will be a project review meeting on Friday, March 23rd at District 4, and I'll be sending you out some a notice about that and which projects you need to discuss. So other than that, that's all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Seeing none, you just need to stay put there, Mr. Kool-Aid. You're up next. Old business, we have none. New business, 2014-2016, traffic crash report update. Item 5A in the packet, Mr. Dave Kool-Aid.
Okay, thank you. The 2014-2016 crash report is kind of a mix of good news, bad news. During this presentation, I'll discuss trends, we'll review some high crash locations, look at what's happening with bicycles and pedestrians, review the new safety performance measures, and then also how you can take advantage of ODOT's safety program. The good news is that overall traffic crashes actually dropped a little bit. We had 231 fewer crashes in 2016 than we did in 2015. But the bad news is that they're still up a little bit from 2014. Injuries stayed nearly the same all 3 years. Drilling down into injuries a little deeper, looking at just serious injury crashes, we had some good news. They are decreasing, but unfortunately, fatalities jumped. Last year they jumped, and then this year they inched up by just a couple. Now, comparing our trends to the state trends, this green line is the statewide trend for serious injuries, and this line, the orange line, is the AMAT trend. And as you can see, they're very similar. They've kind of, serious injuries have been kind of inching down, but unfortunately, fatalities have kind of been going up, and that's kind of been a big concern for that's been a concern for safety officials, and we're just not sure why fatalities just kind of keep inching up. Just briefly, how the crashes are analyzed. We plot them on a GIS layer. We have what we do is we draw circles around all the intersections, and then we put a buffer zone around every segment, and these blue dots are crashes, and we plot them. Now, that sounds very easy and simple, but actually there's a tremendous amount of checking that has to take place, because we find a lot of them are plotted in the wrong locations, and then there's certain areas that that we kind of have to do a lot of sorting out, and one of those is freeway interchanges. Some freeway interchanges have a tremendous number of crashes, but we have to kind of sort out the ones that happen at ramp intersections, and then on the main line, and then on the intersecting street. Generally, crashes within 250 feet of an intersection is considered an intersection crash, but but not always. We look at a number of different things to sort those out. To be on the high crash list, sections and intersections have to meet certain criteria. For roadway sections, they have to have a minimum of 10 crashes per mile per year and a crash rate of 1. And intersections have to have 10 crashes for the 3-year period and also a crash rate of 1. Ranking the locations are ranked by a composite score. What we do is we put a little bit more weight on the total number of crashes, 40% of the score, and then the crash rate and the severity are 30% each. And a composite score just kind of gives you a little more balanced ranking. There were 178 highway sections that made the list this year. That's table 4-1 in your memo. Just briefly, the top five. The number one section was East Main Street in Kent, which is also State Route 59 from Willow to Luther. This section goes right by the KSU campus and probably has had a little extra traffic these last couple of years just because Summit Street, which is somewhat parallel, has been closed. Number two is Martin Luther King Boulevard or State Route 59 or the end of the Interbelt in Akron. Now, this location will probably drop off the list because it's been, I believe in 2017, it's been closed most of the year. Now it's completely reconfigured. West Exchange Street in Akron from Rhodes to Dart. Hopefully this will improve. There's a project underway there. Gent Road from West Market to Smith. And then State Route 14 in Streetsboro from the western intersection of 303 over to the eastern intersection of 303. And this is just a very busy section with a huge intersection in the middle and a lot of truck traffic. 310 intersections made the list. That is table 4-2 in your crash memo. Briefly, the top five is a Streetsboro location, a State Route 14 with Brook Valley Trail, Shady Lake Drive. Now, this is new to our intersection list, and the reason for that is not because something bad has just suddenly happened there. The reason for this is our new method of analyzing crashes is much more accurate, and I think a lot of these crashes used to get coded just into the section. So that's the reason some of these are moving up toward the top. It's not because something bad or new has happened. It's just our accuracy has increased. Maple and Rhodes in Akron, that one is typically always near the top. Broadway and East Norton, this intersection will be modified with the Main and Broadway and I-76-77 project. East Market, Mogador Road, and the I-76 ramp in Akron. That one's always near the top. And this last one here, Corporate Woods Circle and Corporate Woods Parkway in Green, once again, is another one that kind of rose up toward the top. Just through increased accuracy. So the entire list is table 4-2 in the memo. Freeways are done through the central office in ODOT. What they do is they do 1/10-mile sections, and they only consider the top 50. They divide them into rural and urban, and they only consider the top 50 in each category. And in our AMATS area, there were 9 locations that ranked in the top 50. And those are shown on map 4-3 in your handout, but it's very hard to describe those because This right here might be one of their sections, and it's strictly done by log stationing, and it's kind of hard to describe that unless you have the freeway log points memorized. So we just provided a map showing where those locations were. Bicycle and pedestrian crashes, cute characteristics about these, they have a high percentage of injuries. They're usually more random and spread out. It's hard to come up with a list of locations. Many involve younger people that may not know the rules of the road. Bike riders and pedestrians just may not realize what they need to do when they encounter each other. And for these type of crashes, I feel education is very important. The good news with bike crashes is they have stayed relatively low. In fact, these last couple years have been probably the lowest they have been in recent times, and then between 15 and 16 injuries have also decreased. Fatalities with bikes, fatalities usually are fairly low, but unfortunately we had two in 16. Most bike crashes happen at intersections. 66% of them happen at intersections. The rest of them happen on segments and then at driveways. And you know, there's probably not a one of us that hasn't been late for work and has backed out of their driveway a little bit too fast without looking, and wow, there was a pedestrian or a bicyclist there. This graph shows the time of year they happen. Obviously, bicycling is done more in the summer, so the summer's higher, but I found this interesting. September had a spike, and I don't know if that was something related to back to school, but I was a little concerned about that. Here's a couple pictures I just grabbed out of police crash reports. This is a very common type of bicycle crash where a car is turning right and the bike is right beside them, and this particular bike was up on the sidewalk, and they collided right there. And then here's one where this intersection was stop control, and the bike went through it. It might have been a younger rider and hit the car. That's just a couple examples. Pedestrian crashes seem to be up and down. They were down a little bit in 16. They were up in 15. They were down in 14. Pedestrian crashes usually have more fatalities. 7 in 15, 16. They happen pretty much everywhere, intersections, mid-block, driveway. And one characteristic that's different with pedestrians is they happen throughout the year. I haven't ridden my bike probably since last October, but every day I'm a pedestrian because I walk from the parking lot into the office. So they do differ in that respect. And once again, it seems like you have this spike when school starts. Safety performance measures. This is something new that we have to do now. It's a new mandate from the federal government, and it's ODOT and the MPOs have to measure. We have to measure the progress we're making. It's beginning with safety, but this. These performance measures are eventually going to affect a lot of other parts of transportation. The five things we have to measure is number of fatalities, fatality rate, number of serious injury rate, and then number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. And AMATS had a choice to come up with their own or just to support what ODOT decided to do, and AMATS decided to support ODOT's goal of a 1% annual reduction. And there's a more complete discussion of these in your memo, but so far we have been pretty much on target with these performance measures. The ODOT safety program, probably most of you are familiar with, over $100 million is provided per year for safety projects. It's a great program. Really, Ohio is a great state to work with safety, because not only because of funding, but the fact that they provide data that makes the job so much easier. A crash can happen this morning, and I could probably go online and look at that police report by this evening. So they've really made a lot of progress in the last 5 or 6 years. Funding's available for studies, design, right-of-way, and construction, typically from $50,000 all the way up to $5 million or so. And here's the good thing, too, is the local match is usually 10% instead of 20%. It's a great program. A couple new features in this crash report. Page 11 shows a graph of all the crashes by age, and it's a pure graph. I didn't group any ages together. And what I found most interesting is, well, there's a reason that your teenage son or daughter's insurance is so high, because look at the big spike in crashes here at the younger ages. But what really surprised me about this graph was I expected it to go back up, because I keep hearing a lot about senior driving and how bad senior drivers are and all the crashes they're having. But I don't know, unless I did something wrong, I just didn't see it.
Do it by percent of population, maybe you'd see it.
Pardon me?
I mean, there's less drivers at age 18.
Well, that's right? True. That's
so if
true.
You do it per 1,000 drivers, maybe it'd show something different.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. Plus, and they also have the option of just going when they want to. Page 12 shows types of crashes, and 13 shows facts from selected crashes. If you look at this diagram on page 13, if you look at fatal crashes and serious injury crashes, one thing that you'll see that they have in common is it's usually lack of control, speeding, and they happen in dark conditions. Most serious and fatal crashes happen in the wee hours of the morning, and it usually involves just one vehicle going off a road, hitting a fixed object. So concluding, the crashes didn't change much between 15 and 16, but we're still up a little bit from 14. All the locations in the tables in your crash report are eligible for ODOT's safety funding. The locations are also eligible for points when applying for our money. And online, all these locations will be sorted by community. We'll post them sorted by community on our website, so you can easily go to your community and look up what's happening there instead of sorting through that list. If you do have a location that's not in our list, but you feel there's a problem there, you know, I'd be happy to still come out and look at it and maybe give you some advice. Sometimes it's something little, a low cost countermeasure that might make a difference, because any crash is one crash too many. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Just a comment, I saw when they had 40 accidents with people 90 and over. Is that like all of the 90-year-old and over people that had an accident?
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey now.
How many people 90-year-old do you know that drive a car?
A couple.
I can imagine.
Yeah, that's probably just half of them. It's scary. I mean, let's face it, people are living longer.
No, they don't.
Until they drive.
I mean, that's probably scary.
20 years from now.
Any other questions?
Any other questions for Rick Boulet? And we do need a motion to accept.
So moved. Frank here.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Anthony Zumo with a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Hearing none, motion carried. You're still on deck, Dave. You want to get your school up there or what? Item number 6, resolution number 2018-06. Approving amendment number 6 to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2018-2021. Attachment 6A.
Okay, thank you. Amendment number 6 is adding two new projects and revising the funding to one project. The two new projects being added is Ravenna Road in Twinsburg. This is a resurfacing project that actually just came in during this last round of funding, and Twinsburg was ready to go, and they got all their ducks in a line, so we want to add it to our TIP in fiscal year 2018. Cost of that project is $628,000. The other new project is Interstate 77 and 76, which is a big freeway rehabilitation project. Begins at Waterloo Road on the south leg. It goes north on 77 to the central interchange, and then it goes west where 76 and 77 are overlap. Until you get over to the north end of the Kenmore Lake. This is pavement rehabilitation and bridges, some work on bridges. Engineering is in fiscal year 2019 for $1.8 million, and construction is in 2021 for requesting $85.5 million. The other project is a funding revision. This is an existing project, the Barberton, the I-76 Worcester Road interchange project in Barberton. What ODOT wants to do is shift some of the funding into a Garvey bond, $22.5 million worth of funding into this bond. The staff does recommend approval.
Question for Mr. Poulet.
There was an article about the interchange project. I thought they reduced that price down. But they scaled that back a little bit. Is that 85.5 still a good number?
Well,
Is
this a different one?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the $50 million for the south ramps. The south ramps are going to be not just rehab, they're going to be taken out and replaced. And that's the $50 million. Then this is just a pure rehab from Waterloo all the way up through. So they're actually two separate projects. John, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that is correct. The central interchange project has been scaled down considerably, but this is a new project, and this is everything probably but the central interchange.
And it's complete pavement replacement. No wide, no capacity.
Yeah. True preservation project in its finest. So.
Any further questions? I would entertain a motion to approve amendment number 6 to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal years 2018 to 2021.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Carried none. Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Poulet. You've done a fine job today. Item 6B, Resolution 2018-07, supporting an increase in the federal gasoline tax. Attachment 6B in your packet.
All right. Well, so, yeah. thank you. So this all started, for those of you that haven't been at these meetings or that have missed a few meetings, in December we were talking about proposals for and needs of revenue when it came to the federal system. And at the December 14th meeting, the policy committee unanimously voted for the committee or for the staff to do some research, look into a recommendation regarding the federal gas tax, and then bring that to the committee. We brought that to the committee in January as a draft with a couple of different options. At that committee meeting, the consensus built around, or I would say congealed around, the 15-cent increase indexed to inflation. And with that, then we began to write the resolution, which is now before you. We did also receive some other comments that we did make changes, a few changes to, and I'll get to that. I think everyone knows the major issue here is just that the funding that we are receiving right now from the federal government, one, it's not enough, and two, the way that they're providing it is through deficit spending. It's not actually being raised as a user fee like the gas tax was intended to. And I think in order to resolve that, you know, a raise in the gas tax is necessary to provide us with the appropriate levels of funding that we can to do the major rehab, especially that Northeast Ohio needs. I think, you know, we usually don't do this, but I wanted to let everyone know what we would actually be voting for. The purpose, and really the purpose of this is to provide, really, I guess, me the authorization to, you know, write letters to our congressional delegation, let them know that, hey, something needs to be done. There's, you know, a need for more revenue in the federal system. So what I would like to do is just go through the first four points of the resolution, which are essentially that, you know, we recognize that it's not fiscally responsible nor in the public interest to resort to deficit spending to pay for critical infrastructure improvements, that we support a 15-cent gas tax increase in federal gasoline tax indexed to inflation to generate transportation revenue in a fiscally sound manner, that this committee recognizes that the gasoline fuel tax is a short-term solution, that in the long term, a new federal mechanism for generating transportation revenue should be found, and then that this committee encourages the state of Ohio to consider raising additional revenue for the state's roadway infrastructure through an increase in the state fuel tax. And that came up, that was one of the things that was discussed at the January meeting that I think some members felt like we should at least address the state. Obviously, our main goal here isn't to push the state to do anything overly gregarious, but to let them know that, hey, you know, from a state perspective, there's a benefit to townships for having more infrastructure funding, and also a benefit to really all of us. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know we've talked about it for a while now, let me know if you have any questions.
Questions for Mr. Baker? I will entertain a motion for resolution 2018-07 supporting an increase in the federal gasoline tax.
So moved. Morazzi.
Second. Anderson.
I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same.
Aye.
Hearing.
That's what I've been directed to vote.
You got it.
Mr. Anderson.
I'm the alternate.
And Mr. Chairman, at the district level, we can't take any position on this. We can let the record reflect the abstain.
Duly noted. Carrie, did you duly note that?
Yes. We got
there
it.
There you go. Alrighty then. Item 7, other business. Anything for the good of the order? Item number 8, next regular meeting is Thursday, May 10th, 2018 at 1:30 p.m. right here in this ballroom at the Hilton Garden Inn, 1307 East West Street, Akron, Ohio. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.